This is study number 11 in our Western camp meeting in the year 1999. So in our last study, we looked at the hardships that came upon Adam and Eve when they had sinned. And these hardships, the thorns and thistles and the pain under which the woman would bear and the subjection of the woman to the husband, all these things really were a blessing that God permitted. And we want to see now how this is described in the spirit of prophecy. Let's turn to Patriarchs and Prophets. It's in the chapter, The Temptation and Fall. So we turn to page 59, or rather 58. Eve was told of the sorrow and pain that must henceforth be her portion. And the Lord said, "Thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee." In the creation, God had made her the equal of Adam. Had they remained obedient to God in harmony with His great law of love, they would ever have been in harmony with each other. But sin had brought discord, and now their union could be maintained and harmony preserved only by the submission on the part of the one or the other. Eve had been the first in transgression, and she had fallen into temptation by separating from her companion, contrary to the divine direction. It was by her solicitation that Adam sinned, and she was now placed in subjection to her husband. Had the principle joined in the law of God been cherished by the fallen race, the sentence, though growing out of the results of sin, would have proven a blessing to them. But man's abuse of the supremacy thus given him has too often rendered the lot of the woman very bitter and made her life a burden. Now, apart from the misuse of that law, we want to ask ourselves the question, what would have been the blessing in the subjection of one to the other? What would have been the blessing if it had not been misused? Unity? Is this all? Order? Now, we are studying here the victory over sentimentalism, or the battle against sentimentalism. And in this context, we can understand this too. Had this order been observed, it would have been a guard against sentimentalism, very much. Because it would have given the opportunity to exercise subjection. And this subjection, men, or the ability to really submit or subject his feelings, that was very essential. And it had to be exercised in the family. If there's true order in the family, then this is a very good safeguard against sentimentalism. We have just looked at gospel order briefly in one aspect, namely my desire for knowing unrevealed things, and we have just shortly mentioned how gospel order is a protection against this. So likewise, the order in the family would have proved a protection. Now we know that the woman tends more to to regard her feelings and go after the feelings. And if man had taken his place properly, could have guided this in a very good way. Now, we want to stress the fact that feelings are not always wrong. If they are rightly guided, they can be a great blessing. And this would have been the result too. I want to make it very clear again that what we are studying here is not doing away with feelings. And it is not putting one-sided condemnation on the woman as such. It just needs to be all rightly guided. And the misuse of the position of the husband is not only on the side of unreasonable subjection, but it is also on the lack of true guidance on both sides. And this really needs to be understood. Today, I would say it's more the lack of true guidance. I want to draw a little picture maybe that we will look at later in context of education. No? Good. Then we have to look at it later. The way in which the husband would rule over the woman, that is the way how we should rule over the feelings. Now, if there's a proper rulership over the feelings will not be bad, but they will be good. And I want to point to the fact that the feelings are looking for the feelings of Adam and Eve at the beginning were very good. There was no problem in these things. The problem was only that they were not properly controlled. And so likewise, it needed to be after man fell. Now again, if man does not guide his family well, if he does not take his position well, then of course the woman who really needs a guide, she needs somebody to lean upon in order to go her way aright, she is without orientation. She more or less becomes the head or the leader without a spoken agreement or whatever. And as a result, of this disorder, the feelings are given a wrong place in the family as such. Let's read on meanwhile, on page 59. Eve had been perfectly happy by her husband's side in the Eden home, but like restless modern Eves, she was flattered with the hope of entering a higher sphere than that which God had assigned her. Maybe we should just read on before we draw a picture here. And attempting to rise above her original position, she fell far below it. A similar result will be reached by all who are unwilling to take up cheerfully their life duties in accordance with God's plan. In their efforts to reach positions for which He has not fitted them, many are leaving vacant the place where they might be a blessing. In their desire for a higher sphere, many have sacrificed true womanly dignity and nobility of character and have left undone the very work that heaven appointed them. That's interesting. It shows us from the side of the woman. To Adam the Lord declared, before we read this on here, let us think about these two paragraphs a little bit that we read. First of all, it says, Eve had been perfectly happy by her husband's side in the Eden home. But, like restless modern Eve, she was flattered with the hope of entering a higher sphere than which God had assigned her. In attempting to rise above her original position, she fell far below it. A similar result will be reached by all who are unwilling to take up cheerfully their life duties in accordance with God's plan. Cheerfully. And that's the problem. We have Adam, who was to rule over Eve. And in the same manner, the reason should rule over the feelings. Now that this, I do not want to say for a moment that women have no reasoning powers. That is not the idea here. But as we said already, there is a greater tendency in women to have feelings, and their feelings very often are not wrong as such. When women go after their feelings, they sometimes do better than when men go after reason. This is so because reason is not properly subjected to the Word of God. But if reason is subjected to the Word of God, then it shall rule over the feelings in the same manner as Adam was to rule over Eve. And this is the blessing of that order that God now had made for mankind. So it was misused, and it can be misused in both directions, as I said already. Either that Eve or that women are not satisfied with their position, they want to rise above it, and in this way they fall far below it. Or, on the other hand, that men do not properly take their place. And we must strive really to understand our position and take it with true dignity, men and women, both. And both have their place, and if they take this place, they can be a great blessing to each other and to others as well. Let us now go on to read on page 59. To Adam the Lord declared, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree, of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it, cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days, eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee. And thou shalt eat the herb of the field, in the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread, till thou return unto the ground, and so forth. We have read this already. It was not the will of God that the sinless pair should know aught of evil. He had freely given them the good, and had withheld the evil. But contrary to the command, they had eaten of the forbidden tree, and now they would continue to eat of it. They would have the knowledge of evil all the days of their life. From that time, the race would be afflicted by Satan's temptations. Instead of the happy labor heretofore appointed them, anxiety and toil were to be their lot. They would be subjected to disappointment, grief and pain, and finally to death. Under the curse of sin, all nature was to witness to men of the character and results of rebellion against God. When God made man, he made him to rule over the earth and the living creatures. So long as Adam remained loyal to heaven, all nature was in subjection to him. But when rebellion against the divine law, the inferior creatures were in rebellion against his rule. Thus, the Lord in his great mercy would show man the sacredness of his law, lead them by their own experience to see the danger of setting it aside even in the slightest degree. Is this the lesson we draw from our situation? Or have you forgotten this lesson? That is the question. I think very often we are so used to react like Cain did to this curse that we do not realize what a blessing is in it, even in this regard, that it teaches us the sacredness of God's law. Now let's read the next paragraph. And the life of toil and care, which was henceforth to be man's lot, was appointed in love. It was a discipline rendered needful by his sin, to place a check upon the indulgence of appetites and passions. To put a check on the indulgence of appetites and passions. Let's look at this picture again. This is sentimentalism. So what do we find in the line of sentimentalism? We find that feelings rule over reason. Now what is this? What is another word for feelings? Passions or appetites? A check upon appetites and passions, they need to be checked. In other words, reason needs to rule over it constantly. And this is where God would help him. It was a discipline rendered needful by his sin to place a check upon the indulgence of appetite and passions. Now, I ask you, when you look at our society today, where we have more and more free time, because more and more machines are doing the work for us, and more and more unemployment, what do you find that people are doing, generally speaking? Pleasure-seeking and daydreaming. That is really very strong and powerful. There's a direct relationship to it. If people would have to work very hard, then that thing would be checked much more. But because there's more and more free time, there's more and more pleasure-seeking and daydreaming. And today, children are so much left free time, that almost 80-90%, 99% even in some cases, or 100% consists just of pleasure-seeking and daydreaming. I've heard there's a school in California, where children are not even required a certain curriculum. They just go what they like, how they feel. They go to school when they feel and study what they like. What? I don't know the name. It's just what I heard. I find it very interesting. That is the ultimate rule of feeling. And I had to deal with young people who were very strong based on feelings and so forth, and it is very difficult to really labor with them because again and again they become weak and fall into sin, even though they have good intentions at times. Now, the world of art in particular is a world of feelings, and I would really recommend that or young people, if ever they do anything, don't go in the world of art. That is really a dream world today. And it is true that the work also needs some artists, but don't go in the worldly schools. That is, I think, worse than anything else. It is really a dream thing. At least that is what I have seen from people who have been there. So, God places a check on it, and this means work. It was a discipline rendered needful by his sin to place a check upon the indulgence of appetite and passions. To develop habits of self-control, it was a part of God's great plan of man's recovery from the ruin and degradation of sin. The warning given to our first parents, and the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. That's sufficient. We won't read further. So it was a part of God's great plan of man's recovery from the ruin and degradation of sin. So if we leave this away, if we flee our work today, then we certainly avoid God's plan for recovery. Now you may call and say, well, this is all keeping the law, that is legalism. I don't need all this. All I need is to read the Bible and that's it. Then you are badly mistaken. Work is a part of the recovery of man. And if we do not work, we will not recover from sin. You can be sure of this. It is as much a part of the plan of salvation as anything else. And if you have thorns and thistles, let us not complain about it, but say it's good. Now, I'm always very impressed when I read about the old Puritans who had such an attitude to really accept any hardship with a grateful, cheerful heart. For example, I think it was the Wesleys too who developed this spirit. For example, when people would beat them or when they were badly treated by others, they did not complain, but they said, it's good for our proud souls. It's good. We need to learn humility. And that's the attitude they took to these things. That is love of hardship. That is an understanding of what is a part of the plan of salvation. They would not murmur and complain at every little hindrance and obstacle that was there. But they would say, good that it happens to me. I need this. My proud nature needs this. If that would be our attitude today, we would really work on the plan of salvation. But unfortunately, we are far, far away from that spirit today. We are so easily hurt, so self-defensive because of every little thing that comes in the way, that the Lord must have great difficulty to teach us. That is our society and our culture. I see, however, in some a great willingness to learn and also a great humility that comes more like that of the Puritans. And I wish we would all have this, even to a greater degree. And I wish it for myself, really. Let us really pray for this attitude, otherwise we will not complete our recovery from sin. To develop hard habits of self-control, these hardships are necessary. It was a part of God's great plan of man's recovery from the ruin and degradation of sin. So if you would mistreat, wasn't it on the ship of where Wesley went to America, where he was so impressed by these Moravian brothers? And why was he so impressed? Not only because they were fearless in the storm, but also because they had this attitude. They were not treated very well. Am I right? They were not treated very well, and they would never complain, not once, but would only say, it's good for our proud souls. We need to learn humility. And he was so impressed by this. And let us really see this as a part of the plan of salvation too. So I want to leave this here. Now we come to the next stage in our study. We need to see how the plan of salvation was actually fulfilled for Adam and Eve and how they received children that went in the one way or the other, and why they went in this one way or the other. Before we study this, I wish to go over with you a few more principles of daydreaming. I wish to do this just so that we can get the complete picture when we continue to study the single cases of the Bible. We have looked at the several points what daydreaming is. What is daydreaming? We understand it a little bit better now. I want to look at daydreaming from another point of view. Daydreaming really means that our thoughts are captured by a certain thing. If our mind would be captured by meditation on Bible texts or on God or on heaven or whatever, that would be faith. But if our mind is captured with boys and girls and this hobby and that hobby or this and that, then this is daydreaming, really. So our mind is the place that really is the opening window, you can say, to the whole human being. Wherewith is it captured? Where is it directed? That is the question for every moment of our life. Now the Bible calls this worship. Let us turn to Exodus for a moment, chapter 20. And we want to read now the second commandment. It says here in verse 4, "Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments." This is the second commandment. What does this mean? The usual understanding is, well, we do not make ourselves a carved image, put it in our room, and then bow down and worship before it. Other people say it means not to have a picture in the room or any picture. They would have no pictures at home from nothing, and they would consider any picture a sin. What does it mean, really? You shall not make an image. Now, I'm quite in agreement that a picture can be an idol. If, for example, I have a picture of, let's take another point. When you come sometimes into the rooms of young people, you have a big poster of somebody. And when you come into the rooms of girls, you see a picture of a boy, and the rooms of boys, you see a picture of a girl or several girls. That is generally so. Now, what does this mean? Why is this there? Why is this there? For what purpose? Admiration, it is a part of the dream world in which young people live. Sister White describes this very clearly. It's a part of dream world. But it can be so with adults too. For example, there is a picture that somebody has standing and he always must look at it, and when he looks at it, his thoughts are constantly revolving around that person. Now, where should our thoughts be? They should be with Christ. Now, when my thoughts are constantly with an earthly person, even if he's dead, and especially if he's dead, and I look at this picture all the time, my mind is drawing away from Christ and is drawing to that person. I want to really make this clear. Another problem that exists very often, pictures can consume a lot of time. Time that Jesus needs for service, to finish the work. So these are really questions that need to be considered. Are these not idols? Now, what does it actually mean to make an image and worship it? Thou shalt not make unto thee a graven image or a likeness. It means to make anything in our life the object of our best and deepest thoughts. Because as soon as our mind is captured by these things, it's diverted from Christ. And in that moment, we make an idol. It can be anything. It can be stems. It can be pictures. It can be stuffed animals. It can be anything, really, that turns my mind away from Christ, or gives my attention, gives my thoughts to these things. And today, when we look at our rooms, we should really ask ourselves if they are not some idols, which really divert me from the one aim, and that is the finishing of the work, the soon coming of Christ. Ask yourself this question. What is in my room that is not contributing to this? You know, Wesley one day, it was before he was converted, but still it's quite interesting to notice this. He was looking in his room around, and he was seeing all these pictures, and he was so burdened. He said, I spent money for these pictures, so much money, which I could have given to the poor. And from that time he resolved to take them down and sell them, and never buy them again. I really must say that impressed me quite a bit. I asked myself, how much money did I spend, for example, for CDs? Not bad music as such, but how much money did I spend for that, which could have been used for better use? And it's for nothing to contribute to the soon coming of Christ. Ask yourself this question, everybody for himself. What is a matter where I concentrate my thoughts on instead of Christ and the soon finishing of the work? That is a very serious question that we need to ask ourselves in this time. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself and worship them. That does not mean that we literally bow down and worship them, but it means that our thoughts are centered on these things. Now, when you look in a Catholic church, for example, where they have these images and they worship, and you tell them, what are you doing for a silly thing there? They tell you, I'm not worshiping this wooden structure here. My thoughts are just on Mary. My thoughts are on the saint so-and-so. My thoughts are on the saint so-and-so. Where should they be? On Christ. They should be on the finishing of the work. But they are in a dream world, so to speak. That is the real problem of these images. It's not the figure as such. It is the fact that it captures the mind away from Christ. This really needs to be understood. And we can have the same things in our own house. And Satan is very happy that we are rejecting these images of the Catholic Church and have our images at home. He rejoices in this about our dullness, really. We are no image worshippers, are we? And yet we may be. So let us really see this very clearly, how God sees at these things and what means a transgression of the second commandment. So what is daydreaming, really? Daydreaming is idol worshipping. That is what it is. Any daydreaming is idol worshipping. We want to now look at the different factors that contribute to daydreaming. And we need to speak about these factors so that we better understand what the idols are that we need to put away. So, daydreaming is idol making, or it is also an imagination that revolves around self, in other words, exalts self. How does it happen that it evolves around self when I have a picture of somebody else on whom my thoughts are concentrated? Well, it's always in connection with myself, with my feelings and my pleasures and so forth. Now, I want to call these factors that support daydreaming idols. And we really need to see them as such. Some of these things may not be bad in themselves. Other things are bad in themselves. If they are not bad in themselves, they can be used as long as they contribute to the aim of finishing the work. But if they are bad in themselves, they need to be cut off, really. It is absolutely essential. And I want to stress the fact, let us cut them off. Later I will come to the question, at what point of time do we cut them off? That's the next question. Because some have the opinion, I want to wait a little bit until I'm ready for it. Please don't force me to throw my idols away. No, I won't force you. Don't fear. I'm not like some of the reformers who went around and took the idols of the churches and knocked them down. That is not our job today. But The question is, when do I throw away my idols that I have? That is the question. Some people say, I want to throw them away when I'm ready. And that means they think that they do it with pleasure one day. But this is not the case. But let's first look at what these idols are. First of all, films. Can you see that films, if it is theater, I mean films, theater, same thing. In Sister White times there were no films. She mentioned just theater or opera or whatever. Now these things, opera? Opera. Do you laugh because I didn't? I see. Okay. Thank you. Well, then opera is too. True too, both. Whatever it is. It is playing something before our eyes. Also pictures. Now these factors can really support daydreaming. And especially films. We really need to see this in cinema or in television. When a film is running before us, it is taking us on a dream trip. That is absolutely sure. You cannot look on a television and not be in a dream world. Or can you? It's impossible. When you look in a television and go along a film, you're in a dream world. Now, usually, we identify with a hero or whatever, and this is really then installing certain philosophies and ideas into our mind, and it is filling our mind with imaginations which are not holy, which are not pure. I really want to stress the fact, if we want to be ready for the last battle, we must be free from this habit of looking at films and theaters and so forth. Even when we are free from this habit, still the pictures with some go for a long, long time. And long time they are still remembered. And as such, they still place a burden. And it requires much work and labor to get these out of our mind. So read about theater in the spirit of prophecy. If you have the concordance, you can look at it, theater, and read what she says about it. And then, if she would say something about film, would be nice, but there were no films in her time. But she would say more about film, you can be sure about this. And pictures can have a similar effect. I really must say that pictures has been a snare for many. And Satan is working with pictures today very, very much. I just want to point you to the fact magazines today would have no success unless they had pictures in them which were of an impure character. So it is in Europe at least, and I suppose it's not different here. Or if they are not of impure character, at least they are of a dreamy character that leads the mind away into any dream world. So this is one factor. The order is not here important. The next point is novels. Novels can have the same effect, as you know. When we read a novel, we can very well be in a dream world. Not can, but we are, unless we read without interest. But, you know, a novel catches the interest. And can you see that a novel can be an idol? Because our mind is focused on that what is in there, which is an unreal world. And people live in an unreal world as they read the novel. Sometimes when they are called, they don't even listen because they live in another world altogether. That is very much the case. That is a factor that supports daydreaming. It needs to be cut off. Maybe I should say something to film still. For many, television places a constant temptation. And I would really recommend parents, especially, to get rid of that thing for the simple reason that it is always placing a temptation for children. When parents are not at home, what will the children do? Do you know this? The point is that if you want to really stand firm and go your way of preparing yourself for the coming of Christ, better put this thing away. It's better, really, to go into heaven without television than have one and not go to heaven. I really want to stress this point very clearly. Of course, if there would be something essential with television that we would really need, that would be a different matter, but I can't see anything. If we really need news, we can occasionally get it in the radio, can't we? If we need anything else, we can get it somewhere else. Of course, It may be different for some people, but this is just a general suggestion that I want to make, especially for parents. Let's come now to the next, games and sports. Now, I grew up not really understanding what effects games had. My mother, she would occasionally play checkers with me. Checkers is this thing. And even my grandmother would. We never thought anything bad with it. I would then later also learn chess. I was not a passionate player, nor was I ever a good player, but I learned it. Never thought anything bad about it. And then one day, I read in the Spirit of Prophecy what she said about chess and checkers. I was quite astonished. And I said to myself, wait a moment, maybe Sister White was a little bit old-fashioned. Maybe this is a Laodicea statement not applying to us today. We can afford it because we stand above it. But you know, one leads to the other. Chess and checkers may be relatively harmless, but it leads to computer games and to other games and so forth until one actually becomes dependent on games. And this is as bad as taking drugs. There's the same dependence on games as on drugs. You know this, do you? I don't tell you anything new. Let us quickly read what Sister White says about chess and checkers, where she says, there are amusements, that is now in Adventist Home, page 498. There are amusements such as dancing, card playing, chess, checkers, etc., which we cannot approve because heaven condemns it. These amusements open the door for great evil. They are not beneficial in their tendency, but have an exciting influence, producing in some minds a passion for those plays which lead to gambling and dissipation. All such plays should be condemned by Christians, and something perfectly harmless should be substituted in their place. That's something, isn't it?